With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we'll be discussing biographical drama Beautiful Boy, as well as the twisty M. Night Shyamalan action thriller Glass, and we'll also be looking ahead at the most exciting 2019 releases over the next few months. I'm Sam Howlett. This week I'm joined by regular contributor Kelly Powell.
Hello.
Culture Whisper film editor Ella Kemp.
Hello.
And Girls on Top's co-founder Louisa Maycock.
Hello.
Hi guys.
Hello.
Now, you're all here because you hate Timothée Chalamet and you think
famously
he's a terrible
Timothée
actor
Chalamet.
And you're really surprised that he's pulled something good off. Is that
yes,
right?
I need to tell the whole world because I think people like him and like his films too much.
Good. I'm glad you're all here.
We need to take him down a peg or two. Not that beautiful, if you ask me. Average Timothée Chalamet.
Great, I've got the right crew. We'll shortly be hearing from the director of programming for Curzon Cinemas, Damien Spandley, who will be talking to me about some of his favourite upcoming releases in 2019. But first, let's talk about Beautiful Boy. So, starring Timothée Chalamet as Nicholas Sheff, who is a teenager that seems to have it all. He's a writer, an athlete, an artist, gets good grades, and has a loving family. But when Nick's addiction to meth threatens to destroy his future, his father, David, does whatever he can to save his son and his family. This is based on the true story, based on two biopics, is that right? From Nick and his father, David.
Two memoirs, yeah.
Yep. So, guys, initial thoughts. What do we make of Beautiful Boy?
So, disclaimer earlier, that was a joke.
Yes.
We both really like Timothée Chalamet, and I really like Beautiful Boy. And I really like it not just because of Timothée Chalamet.
Ella and I found each other. Our first friend date was at a screening to Beautiful Boy.
It was great.
So it holds a special place in our heart and our friendships.
Absolutely. But I really like the film for many reasons. And I think it's getting a bit of a bad rep from both from people who have seen the film and people who haven't seen the film. I think it's very easy to judge the film on the basis of this is Timothée Chalamet's new film and, you know, Beautiful Boy, it's a fitting title and, you know, all of those kind of things, which is true. But for me, I really appreciated seeing the true story unfold, which I didn't know about the chefs and I don't know much about meth addiction. But I think it's directed in a really kind of different, I don't want to say refreshing, but yeah, really special way where it kind of breaks down time a lot more, it breaks down stigma, it moves back and forth a lot, and I found it to be really, really affecting.
Because it's not a film like Trainspotting, is it?
No, not at all.
So it's based on Tweak, which is Nick's memoir, and also Beautiful Boy, which is David's memoir, his father. So I would say it favours David's point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, David, who's played by Steve Carell, You've got him really leading the whole film, and I think he's on really terrific form, and he's really, obviously, a more serious side of Steve Carell, but you can feel the pain as much as the love for his son, so it's kind of harrowing in a sense, but I don't find it too too dark as a film, because I think Steve Carell is such a good presence to bring that kind of light where it needs to be.
And the bond between them is like strong,
amazing.
Strong.
Their chemistry
is so good. And you do have, it's really believable, their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes it even more heartbreaking when it does sort of break down. I think it's an interesting one from Steve Carell, given the rest of what we've seen him in this year.
He's had a bit of a weird year.
Yes.
Marwin.
Yeah.
Welcome to Marwin, which is a film that exists.
That happened. Vice happened.
Vice,
in
yeah,
a
we'll
big way.
About Vice next week, happened, which he has a huge presence in. And now this. He's really, he's not reinventing himself. He's just doing stuff that
I reckon he's just doing what he wants. He's just you know what?
He's got to the point in his career where he can cherry pick just things that he enjoys.
Exactly. He's like, I want to make one that's going to make me laugh. Or like, that's going to bring up my acting chops.
Because I've heard lots of people who can't get past you know, seeing him in a serious dramatic role. Whereas I've never seen The Office, the US version, so I came to this, you know, completely without that conception that he can only be funny. But he is as well.
Yeah, there are really lovely moments when I think some people I've read don't take him so seriously when he gets angry because of the way that Michael Scott in The Office gets angry.
Or like Brick from Anchorman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he pretty much shouts his way through that film. And exactly. When Steve Carell shouts, I automatically think of Brick from Anchorman. Yeah,
there is a moment where that
exactly. happens. Really? I definitely don't
just
have
go,
that.
Loud noises?
Yeah.
I don't have that foundation.
But I'm sort of that's great.
Yeah, it's good.
When I rewatched it last night, when he shouts, I found it so shocking.
Yeah.
But that exact same feeling as when your, you know, your relatively calm parent suddenly shouts at you.
Yeah.
And you have that sort of like drop in the pit of your stomach.
Yeah. And I think it's a sign of a really good performance that, you know, we all know Steve Carell, but it stays really surprising the whole time. And every time it kind of shifts back into, like, there's so many little funny moments, as you say. And that comes as a surprise where you can hear his really recognisable laugh as he kind of like breathes and wheezes his way through whatever he's doing. And then he does these moments where he shouts and then other moments where he doesn't say anything and he'll be completely still. And it's really heartbreaking. I think he's terrific.
He's good. He's very good in this.
Shall Do you know who else is good?
I was going to say, shall we talk about Chalamet?
Yeah.
Timothy Chalamet. He's really good in this film.
I mean, he is vulnerable, human.
Well, that's the end of the show. Thanks very much for this.
No, he's brilliant. And I think that also he's extremely different from the character that he plays in Call Me By Your Name.
I mean, yeah.
Because
quite
I think,
opposite.
Yeah. And I'd read some interviews that when he'd finished that, well, after that came out, he was worried he'd never get a role as good as that again, and he was really worried about how everything was received. For me, this is really terrific, and I don't know if the film is better than Call Me By Your Name, but I genuinely think that parts of Timothée Chalamet's performance are better than Call Me By Your Name, and there's so much that we didn't see in that film.
Because he gets more of a range in Beautiful Boy.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, it's super dynamic in this one.
How he uses his eyes.
It's amazing. He's brilliant. And I think... It's interesting because, as you say, it's favoured from the David's perspective from the book, which means that often David speaks more and you see David doing more things. So naturally, Nick has less to do and you kind of just see him through the things that he's going through and putting his body through rather than choosing to do. And so I think the way he performs with his eyes is really interesting and really important to kind of make that convincing.
Well, I suppose as well, he's very much the supporting character in this, in a way, even though the film is entirely about him and everything that happens like is surrounding him. And like,
so I think he's the catalyst for for the
story.
So
you need someone to really pull for considering he's got shorter screen time than some other people in the film. He's got to really pull everything into him. And I guess Chalamet is the one that can do that, right?
Yeah.
How did people find how narrative is played out?
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah,
you mean the time, the way that it jumps in time?
A lot of reviews saying that they couldn't, you know, that.
I mean, it is confusing at some parts. You're just like, ooh, and you kind of, I found myself thinking like, is it necessary? But then after the film had played out and you know, and obviously given that these are both musings of their memoirs and like taken from, you know, personal memories, I think that it's an interesting way of unfolding the story that it has affected them both in different ways, and also makes you realize that it is a retelling, it is a memory of a painful time in these people's past.
Because it's not quite fragmented, is it?
No, it works. Yeah.
There's still a flow in how the flashbacks and the sort of sun-dappled vignettes of the past come in. Because you'd expect it to be more fragmented if you're, you know, imagining what remembering a traumatic time in your life would be like.
Exactly, yeah.
I think it works.
Definitely works.
I think it's quite similar to the way that the director Felix Van Groningen plays with time in his other films. So I watched the Broken Circle Breakdown in preparation.
I love that film.
It's, oh my God, it's so upsetting. It's great, but I think it's really, I think that one's very bleak.
Totally.
But watching that and then rewatching Beautiful Boy afterwards, it made me think, do you know what? Beautiful Boy is very hopeful and uplifting
it is.
In a way.
It's a hopeful film.
Yeah, and like I was walking home last night afterwards just thinking, this is great. I'm really glad that we, you know, we're in a year where this is, you know, not necessarily a front runner for awards season, but it is on a lot of people's radar, and the screening we were at was completely sold out, and you know, the film's not out until Friday. And
It's been spoken about a lot, for sure.
And I think it's great that it's got such a high profile, and we're quite lucky that Timothée Chalamet is a person involved. I don't think the film would be as good with lesser performances, so, you know.
Or with his kind of weird cult following that can bring that crowd in to get to these, you know, these kinds of films. He's not making a huge, big budget blockbuster yet.
No, right. Not yet.
He doesn't, you know, he's bringing his audience into these weird niche films.
Yeah. And you know, he cares about the topic of the film.
Yeah.
And the film's got the full support of the real Nick and David, which
is great. They were massively involved. Yeah. I mean, I think all the music that's used is very specific to them and their relationship in real life.
And you were telling me earlier about the drawings.
Yeah, the brother did, the Jasper, real brother did all the drawings for the film. Yeah,
and if you go to the Curzon blog, so curzonblog.com, we have an interview with the real Nick and David and director Felix van Groningen. So do check that out. So Beautiful Boy, which is out in cinemas Friday. Right, so time now to turn our attention ahead. So I spoke to the director of programming, Damien Spandley, who you might know from Our Man in Cannes episodes earlier in the year. We spoke about the films that we should be looking forward to coming up in February and March. Enjoy. So we're talking about what we're excited about coming up in the first few months of 2019. And looking at the calendar, we've got a big weekend ahead of us on the 1st of Feb. So tell us what's coming out then and what we should look forward to.
Well, at Curzon, we're focusing on three films over the 1st of Feb. Not unusual to have three movies that really work for us. On that date, it's just 1 week ahead of the BAFTA Awards qualification week. It's a period of the year when we often have to make really tough decisions between really great movies that are, you know, on release on top of each other, trying to battle it out for, you know, PR and award interest. There's the Green Book is the one that will, well, it's looking like the Oscar favorite. This is the film starring Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali from Moonlight, which has been, you know, it's won the Toronto Audience Award. It's a really great feel good racial drama. It's the story set in the 60s in the American South, and it's the story of a Italian-American bouncer with some questionable views who is forced through his circumstances to drive a black, very sophisticated, educated pianist around the Deep South as a kind of bouncer driver. And the story is really about their relationship and, you know, and how his view of the world is challenged by the experience of his client. It's rather oddly directed by Peter Farrelly, who's best known for the Dumb and Dumber movies. Very much don't judge the film by his cover, because it's very much much more intelligent, liberal movie. It's co-written by the son of Viggo Mortensen's real life character, and it's just thoroughly enjoyable. I actually saw it in Toronto and it got a standing ovation, and it's laugh out loud funny, and exactly the kind of film that both mainstream audiences and crossover audiences will enjoy. On that same date, though, we also have Can You Ever Forgive Me, which is picking up a bit of awards interest itself, particularly for performances from Melissa McCarthy. Again, a little bit of a fish out of water film for her, and Richard E. Grant, who's channeling his inner with Nail, and this is the again, it's based on a real life story about Lee Israel, who was a New York-based failing author who discovered an opportunity in forging letters from famous literary characters and selling them, and Richard E. Grant plays her partner in crime, and it's terrific. It really is, actually.
It's really great, isn't it?
Great. You know, to see those two sparring off each other. It's got a really great sort of down and dirty sort of sense of humor to it, and I know that our audiences will really really enjoy it.
And we're going to have Richard E. Grant on the show in a couple of weeks as well.
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah, no, he's I really hope that he does well with the awards. He certainly deserves it, and I hear a really great guy as well. And then the other film that week is Burning, and Burning is already looking, well, for me personally, like my film of the year. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoy it. This is the South Korean drama that broke the screen international critics grid during Cannes. I mean, it got the highest score from all of the critics during the festival, and was the film that it was actually a little bit of shock when Shoplifters won, although that is also a terrific movie, because it had the highest score that the critics grid had ever awarded. And it's great. It's a real discovery. It's the story of these three young 20-something characters in Seoul, and it sort of starts off as a sort of slacker drama, in a sense, you know, exploring, you know, where South Korea is in terms of, if you like, the sort of new South Korea with the money and Western influences. None of the characters actually seem to have a job. It sort of slowly builds into a sort of love triangle and then into a sort of Chandler-esque mystery. So it's a real sort of genre turner, and it has this sort of subtext or metaphor for arson and burning that sort of runs through it. And so a real, you know, it's going to be 5-star reviews. It's very different from Green Book and Can You Forgive Me? What's quite interesting often happens is that sometimes a particular release date becomes powerful for a particular kind of movie. So last year we had Loveless on the first Friday of February, and the year before Tony Erdmann. And so it's no coincidence that Burning is the, you know, 5-star review movie that's chosen that particular date to come out this year. And then later on in the month, again, another film that the critics loved in Cannes last year, and that's Capernaum. Mm-hmm. And that's being released on the 21st of February. And it's a film directed by Nadine Lerbaki, who people will remember for Caramel, which was 2007, movie. And this is it's a Lebanese drama about a 12-year-old boy who sues his parents for neglect, I suppose. Right, okay. I mean, and it's he's a street kid. His parents very irresponsible, and it's a really heartwarming, quite emotional film about him running away, living on the streets, and trying to get by, and then ultimately ending up in court after he's arrested. And that film is the nominations aren't out yet. The shortlist, it's in the shortlist for the Best Foreign Language Oscar, and I'm sure it'll make the grade. And then moving into March, a film that we're very fond of on the 8th of March is called Border, and it's like nothing you've really seen before. It's I think it's best described as a Nordic woodland romance meets body horror or something like that. It's awesome. it is great. It's the story of this very unusually looking woman who works in customs ferry station, and she has this talent to smell crime on people walking down the corridor. So she stands there each day sort of sniffing potential suspects, and when she smells something, they pull people in and always find something on them. And there's actually this great scene where they search this guy that she suspects of something, and they can't find anything, and then she smells his mobile phone and senses that there's something in the phone, and and ultimately there's some pornography on his SIM card. And then one day this guy, bizarre character, walks down the corridor and has say similar features to her. And she's drawn to him, and it sets her senses off. And she goes on this sort of journey of discovery as to why is she different? Why does she have these unusual gifts? And yeah, there's it's definitely a great, weird, wonderful journey. Okay. And there's a sex scene in it which
I've heard a lot about the sex scene.
So that's going to be a really strong title.
Yeah. It's the same. It's based on the book by the writer of Let the Right One In.
Correct. Yes, it is. Okay. Yeah, yes, it is. So if you do need some kind of access point to it, then that's a great one.
It sounds like they've got that kind of combination of like modern day social, you know, exploring relationships in modern day with this kind of horror fantasy element layered on top.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes those films sometimes they confuse audiences because they're not kind of sure, you know, how to access it. What is it? You know, is it a horror? Is it a romance? You know, it's all of these things, and that's great. You know, let's celebrate that. And you know, someone's testing genre boundaries, which is great to see. On the same date, we'll be supporting a film called Everybody Knows, which is the new Asghar Farhadi, who Curzon audiences will be very familiar with in terms of, you know, he directed The Salesman, which won the foreign language Oscar last year.
Was it the year before? I think it was between that and Tony Erdmann.
Yeah, it was a fantastic woman last year, of course.
Yeah.
And this is Penny Cruz and Javier Bardem. It's a more mainstream film for him.
It's
a genre film in a sense, in that it's sort of a mystery, and it's about this fantastic wedding at the beginning of the film, which is a classic sort of Fellini, beautifully filmed wedding, where and a young girl from the wedding goes missing, and in the course of this crime, the local community, old rumors, old relationships, you know, fissures within the community start to open up. And that's a really strong one that we'll be playing fairly widely across the circuit. And also on the 8th of March, I should also mention The Kindergarten Teacher, which is Maggie Gyllenhaal. It's actually a remake of a film which I think may have been Middle Eastern.
Okay.
I can't quite remember. Yeah. But basically, Maggie Gyllenhaal plays, she's terrific in it actually, and she's well worth the price of admission herself. And she plays a nursery school teacher who has a very passionate love of poetry, and in a very young boy that she is the ward of, he starts writing or coming up with these phrases that really blow her away. Okay. And in her quest to draw out this poetry from him and to have him recognize, I mean, he's a small child, he doesn't really know what's happening, she kind of crosses the line and into sort of obsession and inappropriate behavior. So it's a kind of sort of quite a powerful psychodrama.
Yeah. Well, we have an interview with Maggie Gyllenhaal as well coming up on the podcast.
Great. I'd love to hear what she has to say about that. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a career best performance from her. It's a great period to be a lover of film. And I just wish that for us that these films were spread out a little bit more across the year. But, you know, I can't complain. I mean, as you can see just from the films we've discussed today, the choice is phenomenal.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Great. Guys, what are you looking forward to in the next few months? So kind of stuff, we're now in the period, as me and Damo said, this is the period where the things you've seen last year at festivals
are now coming out for awards season, and it's like the post-festival season run. What did you see at LFF that you're really looking forward to coming out and seeing again and seeing with a bigger audience?
Well, it wasn't at LFF, but I have to mention the trailer for High Life dropped this week, the first trailer, and that is something that I'm...
frothing for.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Having seen it at TIFF, I can confirm I am frothing to see it again.
Okay.
It's so good.
I can't wait.
It looks like there's a lot of frothing in the film as well.
Yeah, can confirm. Yeah. Not untrue.
I'm looking forward to Birds of Passage, which I saw at LFF and really loved. I want to see that again. In Fabric.
Oh,
I really want to see that again.
Ever since
I saw that,
I've heard some excellent things about it.
Yeah, we'll have an interview with Peter Strickland as well.
Yeah.
So can't wait for that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, time now to move to our second film of the episode. This is Glass by M. Night Shyamalan. Continuing both the stories Shyamalan started with Unbreakable in 2000 and Split from 2017, we see grounded superhero David Dunn, Bruce Willis, ending up in a psychiatric ward with his old nemesis Mr. Glass, played by Samuel L. Jackson, and the new threat in the form of Kevin Wendell Crumb, also known as The Horde, who is James McAvoy from Split. This film sounds completely insane when I explain it like that. So it's a weird combination. So it's a really weird film because it's a sequel to two films. It's not really the third. It doesn't feel like the third part. It feels like it's one sequel to two films.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So it's merging these two films together in one universe. Kelly, we saw this last week.
Yeah.
I saw Unbreakable years ago and is a film I really love and I've been watching for many, many years. I really enjoyed Split as well. Mm-hmm. You saw Unbreakable for the first time last week and then immediately went into Glass.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
I loved that.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to go about it because I was very excited. I saw Split just sort of like on its own. And then obviously when Bruce Willis showed up at the end, I was like, what the heck is going on? Why is Bruce Willis at the end of this film? I knew nothing about Unbreakable. Mm. And then obviously people explained it to me and I was like, oh, okay. And then in prep for the press screening, I was like, I want to watch it. And then I watched it and loved it. And I was like, gah! Now I've got to watch the last 15, 20 minutes of Split to remind myself what the hell happened, which I did.
Yeah.
And then I went to Glass and then I was like, okay, I'm ready for this film. I really enjoyed it.
So did I.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't have any expectations. I just kind of went in with the idea of like, you know what, I just want to be entertained. And entertained I was.
Yeah, me too. I think, you know... in a weird way, it's kind of... because Unbreakable is a very sad, very slow superhero film that isn't really about superheroes. But it's... yeah, it's really sort of well-tempered and holds a lot back. And then Split's just like... wah! You know, everything's thrown at the screen. Exactly. It's like someone screaming at you for a long time. And so combining those two tones, I think, is a really tricky task. It doesn't work all the way through the film. But I think it manages to put it off for me.
I think they're all seeing Bruce Willis in this reprise this role.
Yeah.
As an older gentleman, was so great just to be like how is this, and also just getting to imagine what his life sort of was like.
This sounds insane. I know nothing about this franchise.
This film is insane.
Should I catch up and then go and see it?
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's for a bit of fun. I mean, given how many superhero films we have nowadays and how many come out and the hype around it and how serious it all is, and you know, even though it's like action figure comic book figures, everybody takes it very like, oh no, this is the universe, and then everybody's like, which is cool, I really enjoy it, but it's also interesting to watch a film about the concept of superheroes that sort of was an idea 20 years ago, 15 years ago, whenever it came out. And just go, oh, that's an interesting take. And also, he was focusing on superheroes at a time when they weren't so in the mainstream. Yeah. And then coming back to that concept in today's time, and then exploring sort of, oh, what actually, why are we obsessed with these figures? And like, not in a serious way, just in a like, oh, that's a cool concept to think about differently.
So is it kind of self-aware, and does it poke fun at the concept?
I think it does.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
It's very, they, it's a little bit like Scream in the way that you have characters openly talking about superhero tropes and conventions.
Meta.
Very meta,
it's
indeed.
Very POMO.
Yeah.
In fact, the end credits of that film are like shards of broken glass, and I was like, it was super deconstructed. It's quite a POMO film.
We've also got Sarah Paulson.
Oh, yes.
In this one, Anya Taylor-Joy returns from Split. Mm-hmm. Bruce Willis's son from Unbreakable is back in it. You know, yeah. It's a lot of returning characters and actors from these other films.
Yeah.
Also, how weird is Shyamalan's career now? Like this, because he kind of came back with Split, and now he's done this, and it's so weird.
And also, this is distributed by Disney, if I'm not mistaken.
So Disney,
when you look at it online,
Disney
it says Disney film.
Touchstone.
Right.
Yep. Touchstone. Touchstone was Disney's kind of like adult
okay
studio.
Yeah. Right, because when you just look online, I was like,
they did The Sixth Sense and Unbreakable.
Okay, cool.
But they don't really do much anymore, but this is their kind of return to
interesting.
So yeah, go and see Glass, because it's really fun. I think it's really fun, and like I said, I'm glad that Shyamalan's still making these sad superhero films about people that don't really want to be superheroes. And
yeah.
James McAvoy is having so much fun as this same character from Split.
Exactly.
And that's really entertaining to watch as well. So that is Glass, which is out today. We should also mention Little White Lies ran a competition to design a Beautiful Boy cover. And you can see all of the different artworks on display in Curzon Soho. So do check that out for free. And on Curzon Home Cinema this week, we had the winner of the Sundance Jury Award for Best First Feature from last year's festival, that is Monsters and Men, which looks at the impact of the murder of a black teenager by a policeman through three different viewpoints. And it stars John David Washington, who we saw this year in Black Klansman. Mm-hmm. If you have any thoughts on Beautiful Boy, Glass, or any other recent release, do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com for next week's show, or tweeting us at Curzon Cinemas. You can subscribe, leave a review and comment. We are available on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, and any other podcast listening device. You can follow Ella Kemp.
You can follow me on Twitter @EFEKemp.
Cool. And do you have anything you want to plug?
I've spoken to a lot of Timothée Chalamet fans who are not hysterical teenagers. Mm. I put that in quotation marks. But
we're not
adults.
Teenagers, though. So
we're
it's
not.
Fine.
We're not teenagers.
You are hysterical.
Speak for yourself, Sam. But yeah, but this week I've been speaking. Well, in the past few months, I've been speaking to quite a lot of adult fans of all ages.
Okay.
Which you can read later this week on Refinery 29.
Great.
I've read it and it's very good.
Do Timothée Chalamet fans have a name?
Don't think. I think they do. I think they do when they are
Chalamets.
I think whichever journalistic outlet or fan is talking about them, they will have different names.
Okay. Yeah.
The ones I spoke to called themselves Stanmars
because they're like slightly older,
but yeah. Stans.
Stanmars. Okay, Louis, what's happening in the world of Girls on Tops?
We've recently launched Read Me, which is an editorial section of our website, which. Money from the t-shirts we commission female-led film writing, so you can find that on our website, which is girlsontopstees.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys for coming on the show.
We'll
be back next
me.
week. We'll be talking about Vice with the writer and director Adam McKay, so very excited about that. Goodbye from Kelly Powell.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye from Elle Kemp.
Bye.
Goodbye from Louisa Maycock.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy.
That's
oh no.
Yeah.